You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
With me today is David Shapiro for the first Shapiro World of 2025. David Shapiro is from Sesman Securities in Johannesburg. Lovely to have you back, David. You've been in Australia, the Antipodes, for a while with the Christmas. You've had a long time to recharge your batteries and have some original thoughts for 2025. And I look forward to hearing them, as we all do. But first of all, let's look back at 2024, because you did some social media stuff saying this particular country has done this and this particular index has done that. What are your general thoughts about last year?
It was an incredible year if you were invested in the Mag 7 or if you were willing to have taken a bet on AI and where it was going. And remember, this wasn't an easy path. You know, so many analysts, so many investors were suspicious, or if that is the right word, or very cautious about where it was going, whether it was sustainable, what did it mean? And, you know, as the year went on, so we saw more and more money being spent on building out infrastructure. You know, in other words, developing the tools that would allow these companies to take advantage and build models. It's still unknown, but I mean, more and more money is still being spent on it. So I think if we could define 2024, that was, I think, in markets what defined it. And who was way ahead was, of course, the U.S.
Yes.
And I think that's why in one of my LinkedIn posts as well, I said, you know, this is the new catchphrase, American exceptionalism. In other words, they're going to blow everybody out.
Yes, I like that. I like that post. And I of course, had to have a dig at you, a sort of a dig at you about that, because American exceptionalism is very, very niched, isn't it? Because it's not exceptional across the country, and it's not exceptional politically. In fact, quite the opposite. So, yes, I agree with you. But on the other hand, not every single person in the United States is benefiting from exceptionalism.
No, not at all. In fact, what is happening is it's a country that's diversifying even greater. You know, the diversity, when I say diversifying, I mean the diversity is even is increasing. In other words, the rich are getting richer and the poor are kind of getting poorer. Does America like it? I suppose they don't really mind, because that's the mindset of the Americans, you know. They look up to Elon Musk, you know, they look up to Bezos, they look up to these bots, because they're saying, yeah, I want to be there. This is not the case anywhere else in the world, certainly not in the UK. You were brought up there, you know how they think. It's certainly not in Europe, or in where I was in Australia, which is an egalitarian society. They don't like the tall poppy syndrome. You know, they don't like tall poppies. They try to cut them down. So I think in America, it kind of defines America. You know, this is who they are. And I mean, it's...
So are you saying then, David, that inequality is aspirational in America? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, really? I think so. I think so. I think you go into a firm, you know, it scares me. Hold on a sec. You know, I don't embrace it, because I'm not that kind of person. I'm not an aggressive... you know what I mean? I might be on a soccer field or something like that, you know, want to run and get the ball. But in business and that, I go about things kind of quietly, and I don't want to knock out my, you know, muscle them out or something. And that's America. You go into a law firm and there are 10 people. You've got to make sure you're number one, and you've got to then go and knock out the other nine. You know, there's no being nice to anybody. And, it's in a university. If you understand, you go through the whole processes of your success comes probably at somebody else's failure.
David, it shows you how bored I've been. You mentioned legal firms. I've been watching reruns of Boston Legal, which was an excellent series with William Shatner and James Spader and Candice Bergen. And it's cutthroat, isn't it? It's really cutthroat. But people embrace that type of competitiveness, I think, more so in the United States than anywhere that I've ever been.
That's what makes them great, if you want to say, you know, if you believe they're great. It is that attitude. It's you don't leave a space open for your competitor to come in. You know, you make sure that you block them out. And that's how they're brought up. Is it good or is it bad? I don't know. I would never have succeeded in America. Never. I just haven't got the personality.
Well, you too. You see, I was about to say that you've sort of jumped to you've stolen my line there. I wouldn't last 5 minutes in America because I'd just say, "Okay, Jim, you're much better than me. Sorry, yeah. Off you go." That would be me.
No, I'm the same as you. You know, either having been brought up, we were in the Commonwealth, you know, you brought up with kind of British ways of doing things and understatement rather than overstate. You know, we don't go out and brag. I don't go up and say, you know what, I'm the best money manager in the world. You've got, you know, I don't know. You know, you don't do that. We don't do those kind of things. But in America, you do. You see the adverts for lawyers, and when I watch TV in America, and I look at some of the adverts put on by attorney companies. You know, if you were at work and you tripped over a stone or something, come see us because we can claim this for you. You say, you know that kind of stuff.
God, that's really funny because the Boston Legal that I watched very recently was exactly about that. Somebody sued the law firms for their misrepresentative billboard ads. But anyway, never mind that. How did various indices perform? You talk about the Magnificent Seven. Let's compare that to the overall market and also then to South Africa, if you would.
Okay. Well, it's quite interesting because – when you look at the S&P, and why I'm going at this, I'm trying to write an article, and it's not easy to get my viewpoint across. But clients have come back to us all of a sudden and said, "You know what? You underperformed the S&P." I'm saying, "Well, it was never my intention to outperform the S&P. I just wanted to make sure you made money ahead of inflation or ahead of." The long bond or something, you know, that you got a decent margin. I'm not a hedge fund. You know, we don't go out and try beat the S&P, which was up 23%. Now, Lindsay, that 23%, seven stocks, you know, let's call it the Mag 7. In fact, I've been using 8, but I'm going to just so we know the Magnificent 7. If you use those shares, they made up a third of the total value of the S&P 500, okay? Of the whole S&P 500, they made up a third of the value. They take away what they contributed, and the rest of the stocks were up about, I think, 12%. Yeah, I think 12%. So the 23%, you know, contribution of the was made up largely by those stocks. And let me give you some of the gains. NVIDIA was up 170%, Apple 30%, Microsoft was a laggard 12%, Alphabet up 35%, you know, Amazon 44%, Meta 65%, and I'm trying to find Tesla. I haven't got it somewhere along here, which was also up, you know, quite significantly. For some reason, I don't know why I haven't got Tesla. But, I mean, it was all – remember, it came back very, very strongly towards
the end. Trump factor, of course.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, Broadcom was up 107% as well. That also rallied right at the end to make it a $1 billion company. So I don't know why I haven't got Tesla.
Don't worry. We know it did well. I mean, I don't know how many cars it's selling because it seems to. I don't know if it underperforms or overperforms. I don't know. But looking at Tesla's prices, which I was the other day, they're extraordinarily high for. They're lovely cars and everything, but I don't know if you're into cars. I want to go from A to B. I don't need this thing to tell me what to do and do all sorts of fancy things for me. But people love that stuff. I know people that are obsessed with them. My son, for example, is obsessed with Tesla. Every time he sees a Tesla plugged in the Netherlands, he has to stop and clutch the wall because he's so excited. But anyway, so well done to them. And South Africa, David, you've obviously – well, not obviously, that's unfair – you've shunned South Africa in favor of the United States and elsewhere. And were you right to do so?
You know, I must qualify that as well. Yes, I was right to do so. And my whole approach is I'm not geographically influenced because, to be fair, you know, I remained in the Netherlands. I had ASML. I was in Paris. I was in, you know, I was in Europe with the luxury companies, LVMH, Ferrari, and that. Mm. And certainly LVMH, because of its exposure to China, was down, you know, quite significantly. ASML came also under a bit of a rough time because of imposition of sanctions against them, or sorry, they being sanctioned by the US not to supply China. You know, there were a whole lot of issues, and they actually ended in negative territory. But so, yeah, there were some areas like that, but they're still the kind of companies that can muscle their way out of it. You know, they still did well from a profit point of view. They might have, the share prices might have come down, but not their profits. The profits are still strong. So, you know, from that point of view, I still like them. But when I look at South Africa and I look at the businesses there, I say, well, there's nothing that can compare with that. You know, they haven't got that. They're not worldly business, hugely you know, popular businesses. They haven't got the same kind of branding, the same kind of power, the same kind of financial muscle. So it's for that reason that, you know, that I avoid South Africa. I look at the quality of the businesses and I say, well, I don't want, I'm not ready for the, you know, for the resource train. I don't think the commodity market's going to take off. It's going to take a long time for us to get growth and so on. You know, so I'm saying, yeah, not ready for it.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the JSE at one stage, like many other exchanges, was a nursery for new companies, yes, to come through, whether it be a Dimension Data or a cash build or something, yeah, like that. I don't see that anymore, David.
No.
I don't see those companies that are, you know, come on at one rand 50 or 3 rand or something like that, and in 10 years' time you can see them at 50 rand or something. I don't see that. I see it as a shrinking market, and I yes, fear for my for one of my dear friends, and you know that person as well, yeah, who's helped start a really excellent publication, online publication, yeah, and I think, yes, you're very, very good. It's excellent. But the market that you are serving, yeah, is shrinking. You can, yes, be the best company in the world, but if your market is shrinking, you're not going to make money. And that's what I think about when it comes to the JSE.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. You know, articulately put, that's it. There is no growth in this economy. And one of the reasons there is no growth, and we can go back 30 years, I try to define it very simply. I'm saying that, you know, if you come across 10 people in the street, 4 of them are unemployed.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? 4 of them are unemployed, which means that any tax collected from the other 6 has to go and feed these people, give them medical aid, schooling, their children schooling, and so on. And we can't afford it. That means that after doing that, there's very little to plow in. The other thing is that you've still got ideology here driving our industrial policy. It's still an obsession. The other thing is that we're an old economy. You know, we dig things out the ground. And, you know, from that point of view, if the prices are down, as we've seen commodity prices down, that takes away a lot of tax revenues. And, you know, it just makes us poor. It's similar to Australia's in a pretty similar situation, but it's a much richer country. And then we are. It hasn't got the unemployment problems. It hasn't got the social problems. UK as well is not really an attractive market. So Lindsay, you're dead right. There's not the opportunities here are shrinking. There's not. We got so excited because Boxer came on, you know, which came out of the Pick and Pay stable. Everybody wanted.
Which it wasn't a new company. It was part of an existing it is a well-run company. I mustn't be nasty, but a company under the cosh a little bit over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
But it's nothing new, is it? It's a retailer.
Yeah.
Come on
it
now.
Is a return. Yeah, there is nothing there. And I think that this year is going to be a very tough year for South Africa because there isn't that growth. The rand, remember, we were all hoping that interest rates would come down in the United States. Mm. And as a result, we'd be able to lower interest rates here. And the rand, which was hovering around 17.50, 18, would come all the way to 16.54. Forget it. It's still at 19. You know, it's at 19, and with the rand at those levels and oil just creeping up, you know, it hasn't run away, oil, but it's still up. It makes it very uncomfortable for us here. So we're not doing anything. You know what I mean? We're not doing anything. We're not building. We're not growing. We're not adding new industries. It's just sterile. You know, so.
Yeah, it really is, David. And there's nothing wrong with digging stuff out the ground, but it's so cyclical. You can dig out the ground for 5 years, and if commodity prices are low, then, I don't know, you might bumble along. There's a lot of controversy around Exxaro at the moment, for example, and that's all to do with a boardroom shenanigans. But the point is, when it's in your favour, when China is booming, and China is forecast, incidentally, to grow at 4.7% GDP this year, even with proposed Trump tariffs.
Yeah.
But if it turns down, then you turn down. Instead of having a smooth sort of graph for South Africa, it's not. It's an up and down graph, and that is what it is. I don't know. Should we be developing tourism, or should South Africa, rather, should we be developing tourism? Should the country be attracting tea through government incentives or something? Yeah. Or I don't know. There's something not quite right. There's something not progressive. There's something not progressive about South Africa.
No. I think the first thing is that they have to lay the foundation for people to want to live here and then want to invest. When people want to invest, things start to grow. Things start to happen. But the will is not there. You know, the will is I don't mean to be, attack the country politically, but no. I don't think Cyril wakes up in the morning and says, oh, yay, I'm off to work. I want to go build a new factory here. I don't think he's got that. He's worth billions. He just goes through the motions of being a premier. And I think most of the people in the ANC are like that as well. I don't think they've got the skills to actually get us out of a mess. I don't know the DA that well enough. They're trying hard. They're trying hard to improve things here. But, I just see lots of promises and lots of new, green paper, yellow paper, blue paper to do all of this. But what happens is when I look out my window here onto Corlett Drive, I still see sometimes the robots are not working. I still see the potholes that have been there for years not fixed. You know, those kind of things. And, it still concerns me dramatically that we're not fixing those things up. You know, there's a school across the road which used to be a super school. You want to see improvement there. You want to see it given a paint job. You want to see the fields. You know, you just want to see it turned into a government school of high quality, which it used to be.
You want to see kids in uniforms with satchels walking in enthusiastically because they want to learn, because they've got a really good teacher. But what you're saying is something quite different, I think.
Absolutely. And that's my problem. Let's start at those kind of levels, improving what we have here so lives are made easier. We don't make lives easier here. We don't care about our people here. We don't care about their safety. I see our dear friend Julieta, constantly going on, the lights are never on from the airport. If you go on the highway at night, there are no lights to light the way, which I've experienced and actually comment on. It's those kind of things which ensure your safety, which we don't implement here. We don't care about the safety of our citizens.
No.
We've got so many. It doesn't matter if we ride off a few
times. Gosh, there are so many things to fix. I wouldn't know where to start. And if you were referencing Cyril Ramaphosa, the president, I wouldn't know where to start. But anyway, that's South Africa. So we understand that. Just to summarize, you're not anti South Africa. No. You just see opportunities, better opportunities elsewhere.
Exactly like that. Yeah, exactly. So that's, but I'm frustrated that we're not doing anything here and try to improve things. That is a frustration, sure.
All right. Let's have a look now at the macro situation, because you mentioned interest rates, you mentioned inflation. And one of the themes of 2025, albeit only 14 days in, we're 2 weeks into the new year, the demise of the bond market, David. The bond market has been absolutely wiped. Yeah. And last year, everyone was very bullish. I mean, I speak to a couple of institutions, and they were very, very long of bonds, both in South Africa, in the United States, and in the United Kingdom. They must be licking their wounds now because it has been a disaster. Inflation has turned out to be stubborn. The United States economy is still doing well. 256,000 jobs created last month, as referenced by the jobs data that came out on Friday. And inflation's not going down. It's stuck and it's starting to tick up again. Yeah. So bond yields are rising. Therefore, the bond market is falling and people are revising their Fed forecasts on how much interest rates will fall by in 2025. And it's taken people off guard.
Totally. But you can understand why. In September, Mr. Powell reduces rates by 50 points. People say, why 50 points? And they say, okay, well, inflation must be coming down. Then we reduce it another 50, I think, in November, and another 25 in November, another 25 in December. So we're now down 100 points or 1%. And in December, Mr. Powell says, not so fast, people. You know, this is not looking good. You know, we're going to have to – and everyone said, well, what the hell? You know, do you know what's happening or don't you? You know, that's the question. You're now getting a flip-flop. And in the months, not even that, in the few weeks since then, everything's gone the wrong way. It's gone, you know, completely the opposite. And now from expecting at least, and I'm going to say initially at least four reductions in 2025, we're now saying maybe one, you know, maybe one and a half. I say one and a half because people, some say two, some say one. So we're somewhere there. And you're now saying, hold on a sec, I'm badly positioned for this. You know, so the neutral rate, which I think was everybody thought would go below three, maybe 2.5 or somewhere, is now four. Where's it now? 4.5 or four, somewhere around. Yeah. So yeah, you can understand why the bond market, why people have been caught on the wrong side. So Lindsay, I think that there is the 10-year around about November, December was 3.5% or somewhere.
It's 85 now.
It's 485. Yeah. So, I mean, that has destroyed anybody who started to buy bonds at that level. They must be absolutely taken out.
It's the biggest market in the world, and people have been carried out with this one.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm certain of that.
And we don't know where we're going. And I don't think Mr. Powell knows where he's going as well. You know, I think coming out of COVID, I think nobody has really got on top of what happened to inflation coming out of COVID and the disruptions that were also caused by the Russian-Ukrainian war. I think there are disturbances in the whole system that no one's really got on top of and can explain it. And that's why there's this flip-flopping and, you know, looking all over the place. So you can't take, you know, you're dead scared of what they're going to do next. So it's very uncertain.
Yes, it is. Politics is pretty scary as well. I'm talking mainly about the United States. I mean, the UK is not much better. Rachel Reeves, a very inexperienced woman, but she's a fairly good woman. But the Chancellor of the Exchequer of the UK, she's come in and she's caused the cost of borrowing to rise to its highest level since 2007-2008. So she's a bit out of her depth. But in America, which is the one that you'll understand more. Trump and Musk. The Musk and tech influence over the White House is fascinating in a very, very macabre way.
I know. It scares me, you know. And I love you sent me the Guardian's view on quoting Steve Bannon, who himself wasn't exactly a choir boy, you know. And you sent me saying that he thought that Mr. Musk was evil. You know, and he is. He's sticking his neck.
Well, he's mad. Right? I don't know if he's evil, but he's certainly mad. And he's a megalomaniac as well.
Evil was, I think, Bannon's view.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. But we don't know who he is and what right he has to do this. You know, yes, he's a very smart man. He's one of these mad professors, you know, with a propeller hat on. But I mean, but But you know, for him to try and run the world, you know, is maybe a little much. He's not going to last. If you know, it's very hard to make forecasts, but I think there's certain forecasts that we can make. And the one is that 2025 is not going to be as good as 2024. And the other is that Mr. Musk is not going to last in this position too long. You know, because I think somewhere he's going to start threatening Mr. Trump. I don't think they're going to be buddies.
There's two giant egos there that are eventually going to collide, and there'll be an explosion, and one of them will come out of that explosion unscathed, and it will be Trump. He's the president, for goodness sake. So, David, what are you going to do in 2024 for your clients? I think it's unfair for your clients to say you've underperformed the S&P. A bit over 10 years, you've more or less held your own.
Yeah, no, we've held our own, but I'm saying, you know, one thing you never do is brag, because the gods kick the box from under your feet, so you just carry on. It's going to be a good year. What has fascinated me is that very similar to the picture you painted earlier on, rates were going to come down. You know, I was a bit nervous about AI and a lot of those things, but it's actually gaining momentum. Every day there's something new. It's developing at a far, in other words, technology is developing at a far greater pace than we actually thought. And I think people are beginning to appreciate what they can do with artificial intelligence and various other techniques that have been developed. So I don't think this is going to slow down. And I think businesses are going to keep on spending to make sure that they're at the forefront, you know, that they're keeping up with the leaders. So having gone into the few weeks ago, just a little cautious, saying I'm not going to expect too much this year. I think the companies will do well. I still think they are going to dominate. And I think, you know, there are other technologies that I think are going to also continue to come out with new products. And I'm talking about the GLP-1 blockers, those obesity and diabetic drugs as well. You know, I listened to an interview with the CEO of Eli Lilly, and it was fascinating, you know, where they're focusing on now, looking at the brain, in other words, to try and understand addictions, whether it's gambling, smoking, drugs, things like that, you know, saying they're all related. So that also has consequences on things we eat and so on. The other, you know, I know that there's one big fund manager who decided to get out of alcohol companies, you know, beverage companies, mainly because he said that the use of these GLP blockers, you know, these companies are going to affect alcohol, because alcohol is actually dropping, Lindsay. People, youngsters are drinking other kind of products. You know,
it's not just the drugs that will proliferate over the years. Of course, they will once the price comes down. But it's also, I noticed in the United Kingdom, when you were young, you would go out and you'd have a few pints with your mates. Now they don't. They go to they don't go to pubs, first of all, which is why 400 pubs closed, I think, in the UK last year. More than one a day is closing. But also, they drink low alcohol or zero alcohol drinks. So the old pub, which I grew up and fell in love with and still do, has gone.
Terrible. I can't believe it.
It is.
Even this day, I'm not a big drinker, but I think the one thing I would love on a cold winter's day in the UK, and that is walking into a pub, sitting down, have a pie with some mushy peas and mash or whatever it is, and a pint. That was perfect. I prefer that to any gourmet meal or anything like that. For me, that was the greatest thing.
And it's a cultural thing. I mean, the pub, I mean, there was a chap who used to, there's a TV series called EastEnders, which you've probably heard of but never seen. But was the chap that used to be the landlord of the Queen Vic in Albert Square, a fictitious square and a fictitious pub. But he's opened his own pub now in real life. And he just said that, it's part of the British culture to have a pub. And he said, when I was young, there was a pub on every single corner. My dad used to frequent two or three of them, and it was people would get together and smoke and drink and everything. Yeah. And it was a cultural phenomenon. Not anymore. Yeah. And I think it's a bit sad. I'd rather go to a pub than to Costa's Coffee or Starbucks, quite honestly.
No, those are sterile. They're terrible. Mm. It fascinated me because while I was in Australia. Now, Sydney, they maintain their heritage, which is actually a destructive tactic or strategy in that they, you know, building is, but they don't allow building and it's impossible. So sometimes it looks, you know, can look very dilapidated and so on. It's subject to a whole discussion. But what I loved is that you've got all these 1930s and 40s hotels, you know, which were nothing more than a one-story building in Art Deco and that. And they're still around. And I was taking pictures. I was fascinated by all of them because, of course, in those days, if you needed a bar license or a pub license, you didn't, if you were a hotel, you didn't have to apply for one. So what they did is they built a hotel with one or two rooms, which they might let out. And then they got the pub license and a restaurant license. And they still exist today. But I used to walk past them and they, as you know, particularly at this time of the year, there was this incredible atmosphere, as you say, social, cultural, people sitting there drinking their beer and, you know, just chatting. And I think there's nothing nicer than that. Yeah. You know, just on a, especially in a warm evening or something.
We mustn't glorify alcohol, but on the other hand, it is a fact of life and will always be a fact of life. But yes, tastes are changing and will continue to change, David. Okay, good. Lovely chat so far. We've got to finish on football. some matches tonight. Man City are away at Brentford, I think they are. But the big game of the evening is Nottingham Forest, the surprise of the season at home to Liverpool. Liverpool might be showing a sign of not cracking, but certainly the momentum may be slowing down, which gives your team, Arsenal, and a few of the other chasers, Chelsea, etc., maybe even Man City, a glimmer of hope. I don't think they will catch up, but there's a glimmer.
I think that all the teams are starting to show strain, you know, and Arsenal particularly also just tiring, you know, haven't got that edge. I think it's Man City, we've seen it, you know, we've seen it happening. I don't know if it's going to continue, but... it's just too many games. If you watch Arsenal last Wednesday, they played Newcastle United. That's not, you know, they went down. It's a hard game. Then they get Man United. Wednesday, they've got Spurs. Saturday, they've got Aston Villa. These are four top teams that they're facing within the period of 10 days, you know. I mean, it's impossible for people to play at the highest level unless you've got two full teams. So that's where the injuries are coming. But listen, this is the league. Yes. You know, if the kitchen's too hot, get out. You know? But it also opens up, you know what I mean? It opens up the opportunity for teams to lose space and so on.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating time. The football still leaves a bit of a taste in my mouth. I mean, the Spanish Super Cup. Between the final between Real Madrid and Barcelona, and I don't know why there was all these matches in before them, because to me the Super Cup is between the winners of La Liga, the league, and the winners of the Spanish Copa del Rey, the Spanish Cup. But no, there's been lots of matches, and I read a scathing article about it that it was played in Jeddah. Why is it being played in Saudi Arabia between two Spanish teams? It's disrespectful to the real supporters of both Real Madrid and Barcelona. It's an outrage, David, as a football fan myself, which you know I am. I don't know how you believe.
Then it must have been the two clubs or whoever it was that need the money or were paid an extraordinary amount.
It's sports washing by Saudi Arabia. That's what it is. We'll pay you this amount of money, but you've got to play the game in Jeddah in front of us. And it's just not fair. And the Spanish press was also pretty nasty about it. But anyway, that's us. Okay, David, it's lovely to have you back. I've been dreading doing an interview, not with you, but this is my first podcast of the new year. And I've been dreading putting on my headphones, which are only half working, by the way. But I've enjoyed it enormously. And we'll speak again with Viv on Thursday, with Viv Bermuda. That's David Shapiro from Sassman Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.